Welcome to Mosaic Senior Life's podcast, Senior Sense, Navigating Your Journey. I'm Mary Przinski, here with my co-host, David Magner. Today we are here with Marie Allen. Marie is President and CEO of the Southwestern Connecticut Agency on Aging, otherwise known as SWACA. In this role, she develops plans and implements services designed to help older adults and persons with disabilities receive care in the community and care settings of their choice. She spent over 25 years improving long-term care support in the service of older adults. She serves on Connecticut's Long-Term Care Advisory Council, Aging CT, and was a member of the Governor's Advisory Group to reopen Connecticut during the public health emergency. Marie, welcome and thank you for coming today. In your position, you are looking at new laws, and although it might not sound like it's a direct relation to seniors to the average person, but you make it your business to see the impact that the law has on seniors, like in this case, the Connecticut minimum wage increase. Tell us how the minimum wage increases affects seniors.
Well, thank you, Mary. I'm happy to be here. The minimum wage influences everything that we buy or use. And for people living on a fixed income, it will have a greater effect than on others. We can see the effect in the prices at the grocery stores, restaurants, and transportation services. For older adults and others who need help with everyday activities, the minimum wage affects the cost of home care services. Services like homemaking or companionship, chore services, assistance with medication management or dressing and bathing, all of these services index off of the minimum wage. As the minimum wage goes up, the hourly cost of care goes up. In Connecticut, the average cost for care is about $30 an hour. So someone needing 4 hours a day of assistance is looking at about $3,600 per month. If you or your loved one needs daily supervision for 8 hours or more, families are facing expenses of about $5,000 per month. If we take it one step further, that's in the neighborhood of $60,000 annually. For many seniors who have lived longer than their resources, $60,000 is a big nut to crack. If a loved one needs care Monday through Friday and can attend one of the region's wonderful adult day centers, like the one here at Mosaic, they will receive lunch, nursing services, socialization, and transportation bundled into one package at a lower daily rate of about $125 a day. When the minimum wage increases, home care agencies or in-home services are often in competition with retail grocery stores, food chains for the same staff who would entertain a career in direct services for older adults. This drives the cost of care, especially in the home care companies that look for qualified, compassionate employees and provide training and supervision.
So Marie, another new change in Connecticut that you relate to seniors in our community is the new 2024 Connecticut tax code. So can you elaborate a little bit more on how this affects seniors, not only in our community area, but of course across the entire state?
Sure. This is some good news, David, for Connecticut retirees. Prior to January 1, retirees earning $75,000 or less could claim an exemption from state taxes. But if you earned $75,001, you could not claim anything. Mm. So the tax code has been changed in Connecticut effective January 1, so that if you do make over that $75,000, we have a step exemption that allows you to exempt more money. So if you made, for example, $75,010, you would qualify for a step down of an exemption effective January 1, 2024, single filers and married people filing separately with an adjusted gross income between $75,000 and $99,999 can exempt a percentage of their income from taxation, as can married people filing jointly with an AGI, between $100,000 and $149,999. The exemptions range from 100% at that $75,000 level to 2.5% at $99,999. This is really great news for retirees. It is a combination of Social Security, retirement funds, annuities, but it can make a big difference for those individuals earning over that $75,000 maximum.
Great to hear.
So based on these new laws and other outside costs, what's your feeling on people retiring in Connecticut?
Well, Connecticut is a great place to retire for a number of reasons. What we have found, the studies have found, that people in Connecticut, older adults, enjoy greater health, longer lives, and incredible access to art and culture, beautiful open spaces, all of these things that really make living more pleasurable for the retiree. Our weather patterns are more moderate than our northern neighbors and more moderate than our southern neighbors. So we also have a number of educational opportunities. Many of them are tuition free for retirees. So that makes lifetime learning a real possibility for our retirees. On the downside, Connecticut is the land of the have and the have nots. If you have not the income to pursue these activities, or the mobility to access care or public transportation, Connecticut can be a more difficult place to retire. Finding that sense of community, making sure that you have supports, either from family, friends, you have the ability to get to places and you have transportation options that will help you get to your medical appointments, your social activities, your senior centers, your volunteer opportunities. All of those things become very important. And it is basically up to us to make sure that we put those things in place during retirement.
You mentioned, interestingly, that Connecticut is a little bit of the have and have nots. Can we expand a little bit on some areas that we need to kind of meet the needs or the challenges our seniors are facing as they retire in the state?
Sure. Especially here in southwestern Connecticut, we see ourselves with one of the poorest communities, cities in the state, Bridgeport, and some of the wealthiest. When we look at New Canaan, Darien, Fairfield, Greenwich, you can really see that disparity in income and the available assets to help us as we age. I think when we look at Medicaid services, you see that individuals have to impoverish themselves before they qualify for a lot of the services that can help someone remain in their home. And if someone has a lot of money, if they are asset rich, they can pay for those services. But there's that whole group in the middle that really struggle to have the resources that are needed to stay in their home and age in place. And as the minimum wage increases and we see things getting more and more expensive, we find people in that moderate and middle income spending more money on everyday items such as food and medication and having less money for those other opportunities that keep the mind, the body, the spirit active and connected.
Especially as we're looking at the baby boomer generation aging, so it's important to really address these challenges ahead of them.
Absolutely. The baby boomers are definitely changing the way we age. The expectations for baby boomers, the expectations they have for themselves from the community are very different than the generation before them. So I think we see a lot of community-based services kind of struggling to catch up with the desires right. of the baby boomers. Programs like your long-term memory care programs become increasingly important as they offer opportunities for socialization and gathering of people who need that social support and do not want to isolate in their own home.
Correct. Marie, so speaking of challenges, as we talk about seniors retiring here in Connecticut or throughout the entire country, what do you see as some of the big challenges for seniors when we talk about aging in place?
I think the greatest challenge for older adults is planning for long-term care. 7 out of 10 women and 6 out of 10 men who live to be just 65 years old will need an average of 3 years of long-term care services. And as we discussed earlier, these services can be very expensive, and they come at a time when the individual has possibly outlived or strained their assets and their resources. We would all agree that living longer is probably most desirable, but do we have enough money, the right environment, and the care to make it to the finish line? It's what I find really interesting is that most families and individuals spend more time planning their summer vacations than they do planning for long-term care. So that leaves a real gap between what is needed and what's available. Americans have always been very proud, they're strong, they really value their independence, that independent spirit. A discussion about how someone will be able to get groceries when they can no longer drive, or how they'll be able to bathe when they're no longer steady on their feet, is not a good conversation for people who pride themselves on that independent spirit. We just think about American songs, Justin McBride's I'll Be a Cowboy Until the Day I Die, Tom Petty, If You Never Stop Moving, You'll Never Grow Old. And what about girls just want to have fun? What about the older ladies? Don't we want to have some fun too? So the way that Americans really focus on that youthful existence and independence. So spending time thinking about a time when we might have some frailty, a lack of mobility, or need assistance from others is not really pleasurable. Americans think they'll be youthful and independent for their entire existence, and they'll just wake up one day when it's all over, and that'll be the end. But the data tell a very different story. Those of us who hope to age in the community must speak to our children and our loved ones and make plans. We have to make sure that we're comfortable asking for help from family and friends, and also from community resources. We must take advantage of the incredible network of supports that are available in each community. We have to plan for what we would do if we can no longer drive, and we have to plan for what we can do if we can no longer express our preferences. The time to make decisions about what our preferences are is not at 5 o'clock on a Friday when we're being discharged from a hospital and family members are in 3 different states. These are conversations that probably are not ones you want to hold during Thanksgiving dinner, but they are essential conversations for every family to have, making sure that mom and dad understand it's not that we want to know all about their business, but it's that we want to make sure we're honoring them in the way that we help them see it through their final years.
I agree. And I think you mentioned a really good statement before about we're quick to plan a vacation with family and loved ones, but we're scared to have tough conversations about what the future looks like. And also being educated about what services are available out there, as many caregivers and care partners do not know once they're kind of forced to navigate through the healthcare system.
So true, David. That's a problem for families. And it really does cross all economic systems, all age systems. It doesn't matter. There are very few families who are comfortable having that conversation.
Question for you, whether it's today and how we serve our seniors or we look out 10 years from now, what do you think in general, maybe in southwestern Connecticut, are some of the gaps in senior services that we're currently not meeting at this time?
Sure. First, you think really we're a very car dependent society. In order to get anywhere, you really have to be able to jump into your car and go. Our public transportation in some of our larger cities is fair. But it is not door to door. And it's like that last mile that really hampers an older adult's ability to use public transportation. So for someone who is dropped off at the bus stop and has to walk 3 blocks, that might be fine in their 30s, 40s, 50s. But at 82 with a bag of groceries, that might be prohibitive and a barrier.
Right.
So I think transportation is certainly one of the gaps. Access and education, I can't stress that enough. You don't know what questions to ask. It's the first time that you're experiencing challenges to your independence or mobility, and there's a lot of fragmentation. We see a lot of marketing on television that sometimes is not really accurate to one's individual circumstance. The array of senior services depends on a person's needs, their abilities, their disabilities. It depends on their functional and cognitive needs, and it depends on their financial abilities. And it's a complex puzzle of those three issues that can determine what services are available. We have a lot of lists. You can call 211 and get a list, and you can go on a website and get a list, and it will give you a list of here are all the home care agencies. And you can look through them and say, oh, these look fantastic. However, if you don't know whether or not you qualify for those services, you don't know the cost, you don't know if that cost is prohibitive or something achievable for you, you don't quite understand what does adult day center mean, what is a companion versus a personal care attendant, it can be extremely overwhelming for any caregiver or any person seeking services.
And specifically, not one service fits all for each
Absolutely
individual.
Absolutely not. The services are really based on people's preference. In the same way that, you know, I liken it to when you help an adult, a child with a college search. There are a multitude of colleges that will provide the same degree for that individual seeking it. But whether or not it has the sports the child is interested in, the extracurriculars, whether or not it has small classroom settings or large classroom settings, all of those things have to be determined in order to find the right fit for your college student. The same thing happens in senior services. We have services that are made to go into the home and support in a one-on-one direct service. That might be something that many people enjoy. Others, that's very isolating and very lonely. So they're looking for a more communal experience where they can socialize, where they can get a number of different activities of daily living met. And those that we look at adult day centers for situations like that. For many years, I worked in senior services and worked with senior centers. Those are wonderful places, and I always laugh when someone is 85 and says, I'm too young for those centers. That's not where I'm going.
A long way.
Exactly. Yeah. However, senior centers today are not your mom and dad senior centers. They're very different. They are modeled very differently than they were 25 years ago. They have Pilates. They have Zumba. They have Recce. They have bridge tournaments, they have educational programs. So it's a very different look. Perhaps sitting at a senior center all day is not for you, but taking a couple of classes, finding fellowship and friendship at those centers might very well meet someone's needs and really help make that connection.
So I find that I always people that call in and they're looking for services, they don't know where to go. I often send them to the Agency on Aging, SWACA, and we also have an elder care navigator who's kind of like a key point that kind of can point them to the right direction. Okay, what is your story? And okay, these are some services that you might be able to take advantage of. But I always refer to SWACA as well because you're the experts. You've been in the business a really long time and you know the services that are out there as well. So
yeah, I appreciate that, Mary. We're actually celebrating our 50th year.
Yeah.
This year, which is
yes.
You know, extremely exciting. And like you, we're working more along that navigator system because we find, again, people come and they don't know what they don't know. And right. So making sure they understand the landscape, they understand the services, the community-based organizations that are out here to support them can make a tremendous difference in the success of their aging.
Right. And do you want to just give the telephone number of SWACA so that way if people are listening, they want to talk to somebody there?
Sure. SWACA's department is called Aging Answers. So in other words, you have aging questions, we probably have an aging answer for you. And it is 800-994-9422. You can also reach us at www.swaca, that's SWCAA.org, on our website if you just want to find out a little bit more about the community services, including Mosaic, who are prominently featured on the website.
Great. I know we've been talking about some heavy and possibly stressful topics, but when it comes to seniors, so let's lighten it up a little bit and help people who are listening hear about the ways that we can manage stressful times.
Excellent question. There's a prominent Yale psychologist, Becca Levy, who has completed a number of studies on aging, but she has studied a lot on what makes how positive aging beliefs affect positive health outcomes and positive aging. She started her studies in Japan, and for many years, Japan's elders had more longevity and better health outcomes than almost any other nation. She found it really interesting that when you watch TV in Japan, you would see centurions and super centurions celebrated in almost all forms of media. They really did revere their elders. Very different than the ageist culture that we seem to have here in the U.S. To find positive images of aging on television, someone who isn't either facing significant health or dementia challenges, or someone who's not portrayed as grumpy or unreasonable, is really difficult in American media. So she started to wonder if those images of positive aging were actually the things that helped older Japanese individuals live longer and live with greater health. Dr. Levy also experimented with two groups of older adults in the United States. She worked with one group to form really positive beliefs on aging, and the other group had formed somewhat negative ideas about aging. Will I be poor? Will I be healthy? I think people won't like me as much. I think I'll feel more invisible. Versus age is an opportunity to learn. Age is an opportunity to give back in the form of volunteerism. Age is an opportunity to share my knowledge with my grandchildren and others. Of the two groups, they studied them for over 5 years and found that those individuals with a positive age image, positive beliefs on aging, were able to recover from illness more quickly. They suffered fewer bouts of depression, and most notably had fewer dementia diagnoses, indicating that positive outlooks for aging really do improve health outcomes. This is wonderful news. Because if we're able to look at aging as a new chapter where you have time to volunteer, visit some of our outstanding senior programs, get involved, get moving, spend time with friends, give back, we can change the trajectory of our aging health. And that is incredibly meaningful.
Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on our podcast today, Marie. We appreciate it. Your insight, a lot of the information you provided, I know will be greatly beneficial to so many individuals listening today. So, Marie and I want to thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of Mosaic Senior Life's podcast, Senior Sense, Navigating Your Journey. This podcast series was created to provide information and stimulate discussion about important issues in aging services. I am Andrew Banoff, President and CEO of Mosaic Senior Life. Every day, we are asked questions about aging, Alzheimer's disease, home care, and all aspects of the senior care navigation process. We hope that this podcast gave you valuable information and that we can be of assistance to you and your loved ones in your journey. Please stay tuned for additional episodes on topics that are meaningful to you. In the meantime, please connect with us at mosaicsl.org, that's mosaicsl.org, or call 1-833-MSL-LINK, 1-833-675-5465 for answers to your individual questions. Thank you.